From PWRDF, this is A Just Generation, where we delve into the world of social justice and social action, speaking to people around the world who are making a world of difference.
Hello, everyone. My name is Emily Walker, and today I am thrilled to introduce Jeanette Lahr as our guest. Jeanette has a heart for working with people, especially women and girls. She believes in the power of community development and knows that through women simply coming together, they grow and learn from each other, improving their health as well as that of their community. She works for PWRDF as a development program coordinator, and among the various projects she manages, she works with a community of women in Guatemala associated in an organization called Ixmucane, with the goal of educating and empowering women on their rights and preventing discrimination, exclusion, and violence against women, while improving women and youth knowledge about sexual and reproductive health. Needless to say, there is so many things to talk about today and learn from this community and these women. Jeanette, tell us about yourself.
Hi, Emily. It's nice to talk to you. Thank you for the invitation. My name is Jeanette Lahr. I grew up in Colombia and came to Canada like 33 years ago. I learned the power of community development, a popular education, and that's what drew me to this work. So most of my life, I had been working in community development with youth, with women, with different groups. I think when people realize that they can achieve goals and that it's possible what they are dreaming of, that's very inspiring. And that's what I would like to support people to do.
Yes, your passion for bringing people together is so evident in your being and in your work. And I can't wait to hear some of the lessons you've learned from following this project for so long. I think it's 25 years now, right? You've been with this project.
I have been working with the Primus World Relief and Development Fund for 22 years. And one of my first projects were in Guatemala, actually with women who were in refugee camps due to the conflict. Usually women are the drivers in the family, and they are looking at health issues and income and production and food. The work that I first witnessed was that of the women we are talking about today. Civil war. It involved the army in Guatemala. The government never did anything to stop that. Some civilians. It really affected Guatemala for 30 years. So many people fled outside the country. Many people went to refugee camps outside in the communities of Quintana Roo, Campeche. There they became refugees. They spent almost 10 years in refugee camps. While in the refugee camp, the women were the ones who took the leadership. Two reasons. Why? One, men were working outside. Men went to other places in Mexico to look for work. And many families were headed by the women because the men were killed, assassinated, disappeared during the conflict. So the fourth were the women. The women got together to ask for food to Mexican government because they didn't have food. The women got together to ask for support. And international organizations got together to support the women. So women got training, women started to be the leaders in the communities, and that's how they started all this process.
That's amazing.
It was hard for the women because not only they were displaced, the land was stolen, their family, relatives, husband or brothers or sisters were killed, but women were sexually abused, and that's one of the big things that happened. And they always kept that in silence. So even with that, they were able to help the community. And after 10 years, they returned to Guatemala. There were the signing of the peace accord. Many returned to Guatemala in a different moment, around 1995.
Guatemala has such interesting political history and like frustrating and sad, but to see these women advocate for their self is so important. I know that you said these women came back to Guatemala and maybe didn't end up in the place where they maybe were from. I remember us talking about how many women lost their ancestral property because they were resettled in a different place. This resettlement was especially awful for Indigenous people and their connection to the land that their ancestors lived on because they weren't there anymore. They also lost family members as well as the connection with their communities and their culture when they had to return to these unknown places. We know that for these women, Exmukane was and is like a lifeline to connection and support in a new place and a new land. Can you tell me a little bit more about this?
When people flee, they went to different places they couldn't, you know, choose. So you find in a refugee camp families from many different places across Guatemala. Guatemala has 22 different indigenous peoples with 22 different languages. So people with different languages all together, they couldn't speak. They were forced to learn Spanish to be able to speak among themselves. They never returned the same groups as they were in the refugee camp. People were asked, where would you like to go? The government had obtained land from big landowners, and they were not given that land for free to people. The people will have to pay many years, but they will offer this land to families. So people will choose, I want to go to the south or to the center or to the north. And the people who chose to go to Petén, the north part of Guatemala, border with Mexico, it's kind of a jungle area, you know, forest. They were the women who became Exmukane, and they came from different places. So again, they reunited together people they didn't know, some knew each other, but again, with different languages, different ethnias, without a land that it was not their land because their land was stolen. When they left, people from the army and people from other forces, they got the land. So it will be more difficult to try to recover that land. So they wanted to come back to a peaceful situation. So they accepted and they went to this new territory where they have a little plot. They could start settling and growing and continue with the families that in the refugee camps have become bigger. Because in 10 years, you have more kids, and kids grew up, and, you know, a different situation, but everybody came to this with all this pain and all this sorrow and all this loss, but trying to build up a community.
Yes, I hear you. This story of like rehoming and their resilience. And it makes me wonder when this land was given out to people and to citizens of Guatemala and to women, did women get the land titled to them?
Not necessarily. I think the process of being displaced and the process of women learning, becoming leaders, becoming literate, they realized that having the land was important. And they realized that in Guatemala, at that moment, by law, only men had the ownership of the land. So if they separated or something, the land will be given to the son, but not to the women. So all the women in the different camps and different new settlements across Guatemala, they reunited in a huge organization, and they fought for the co-ownership of the land. So by law, right now, women are entitled to have the title or the land. Now, women need to express that. Many women did. And right now, there are many who are co-owners of the land. But some others, no. The education and the inspiration was a little bit short for them to say, yes, I want to do that. But they know that that's possible. So by law, there is something that can help them to fight if they need to and they want to.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. And I know how much power there is in land to be able to produce food and then to make money and to feed your family. That is such a good force for equality. I know this community works together to talk about sexual and reproductive health as well, which goes hand in hand with violence against women. When women have the language and knowledge to know what is safe and what is violent against their bodies, they're able to then talk about it with less fear, making them all safer. I know you visited this community many times. Have you heard these conversations happening, and what was that like?
Women, it's clear for them that health is very important, and not for a reason different than to have children, because it's one of the most important things for them. Trying to protect their lives, you know, while in the refugee camps, they have the support of international communities. So they started to learn that there were things that they could do for themselves. I think it was also a period where reproductive health became important. So women became aware of that, and they look for it. They learn themselves, and they try to teach their daughters and their boys about that. They know that their health means the health of the community. In one of those workshops, it wasn't in Mucane, but it was another community in Guatemala, and we were talking about something related to that, one project, one initiative, and one woman, without anything more, started opening it up about sexual abuse. The sexual abuse she experienced, she was subject to while the army took over their aldea, their town. And she explained it how she also saw other women being raped, and how other women saw other women being raped, and fathers and brothers saw that. They witnessed all these terrible things. And she said, we haven't dealt with that. And there are many women that keep that secret. And only little by little, imagine how long it was. Many women already died and took that to the tomb. But many others still talk about, and they said, this is a big thing that needs to be addressed sooner or later. So some women do, some places, you know, they have groups, support groups, and they try to deal with that. But in terms of the psychological impact and the mental health and the physical health, because we don't know what happened to them. But that's kind of an unknown reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And the power that woman had in courageously sharing something like that and letting her community support her, I think is something we can all learn from. I want to know more about a development plan called Katoom 2032, which aims to urbanize rural Guatemala and push urban populations to grow from currently 58% to 79%, and bring to Petén tourism, development, agribusiness, oil exploration, major transportation infrastructure, control of the water cycle, and a hydroelectric dam, if that all wasn't enough. When I first read this, I thought, wow, okay, like this is going to be great for them. It's going to be awesome, you know, help bring business and income. But tell us how this community is reacting to this plan.
It is a plan. I think it was launched like maybe 5 years ago, a little bit more, but it particularly touches on the Petén region. Petén region is the unknown region, it's the jungle, it's the rivers, the trees, you know, the habitat. It's the land of the Tikal Maya. They say ruins, but they're not ruins. You can actually go and visit them. In that place, you have communities, 10, 11 communities, town, very isolated, remote from each other. It's like 6 hours to travel from one to the next. And in that place, 300 families settled. And they settled with the hope that they will have land to live from, a place to protect. And now with this, which is apparently a development of, it's a plan that people are afraid of because they said it's going to destroy the environment with the creation of roads, with the dams, and also with the monoculture of some products, particularly African palm. They are going to destroy it and to alter totally the ecosystem. And they said we won't be able to live the life we thought we were living. So one of the things they said is, because many women there are members of the regional council, they said there was no consultation with the communities. Now that the plan is in place and they are going to implement, then they are asking people if, oh, do we do A or do we do B? But A or B are equally non-good. One of the issues that this community has right now is becoming a corridor for drug trafficking and trafficking of people, because it's a very easy, permeable border to Mexico. So they said what is happening is that this will become the place of excellence for traffic of drugs and people. And they said that is going to totally change the social fabric of this region.
It is so sad and frustrating to hear that this plan isn't listening to the citizens' voices, to the people on the regional councils, and just unsustainably expanding. Through all this rehoming, resilience, and resistance that has happened in these women's daily lives, what brings them joy? I know when you visited there, it's beautiful. And so what does the land they're trying to protect look like?
You can see the beauty of the land, the trees, the river, the animals. They have alligators and snakes and all these things that are terrify you, but they're beautiful too. But they love that. It's their land. We in the cities, we don't have that. We don't know what that is. They do. And they know the cities because they have been in Guatemala City, and they don't change that. They love that. So for them, one good, nice thing is to get the family, go to the river. With a community kitchen, they go, they cook, they eat, they take a splash in the Usumacinta River. That's beautiful. Getting together in the community, having meals together, that's an important thing. Getting with the family is important. People like to work for the community. The women like to see that there is improvement. They enjoy that.
Something about swimming and eating, I think, just makes everyone happy. So my final question to you is, what are the things you think that listeners and all of us can take away from this community?
It's been a very interesting experience for PWRDF, and I would say for me, because except for 4 years that the projects were given to somebody else because I took the Africa program, I have been with those projects since the moment they went into the exile up until now, and we are going to our last years of support because we said, okay, it's good enough. We have been accompanying them for a long time. One big learning is we are going to do an evaluation and trying to see what we did good with them. So it's a learning best practices, asking them if we did a good job. So that's good. The second thing for me is it's just a beauty of being able to support the community and leave them. They're not perfect. They will continue with their struggle, but they are in their 2 feet and they could continue. I took the resilience of the women. I think it's important to value their love for their communities. And sometimes I think in the cities, we don't have that. We don't have that ownership. And they fight for that. And no matter if we give money, we support them, or we don't, they do it. And to me, that's valuable. The fact that they work, they grow, they develop themselves, help them to help their children, their girls, their boys, even their husband. Husbands change it. Before, they couldn't even cook tortilla. They do it now because the women can go to the workshop and he can take care of the kids. So there are changes. It's possible there are changes. There is a more balanced gender role. There is change. So there are women that can see, oh, so-and-so, look, he does. That's mine to do the same. Little things like that. So women are developing further, are learning more, are understanding more about gender, about inequalities and equilibrium, how to get that. And the communities are improving. Women work for the community. Women don't work for themselves. And to me, that's an important thing. They have dreams. They would like to have a school. They would like to have a health center. I'm sure they will. One of the communities or two will have it. And hopefully there will be other people supporting them so they could have nurses or somebody can be trained. Those are important pieces of work that after many years you say, oh, maybe we could have vested in a couple of people that they learned it. What they say sometimes is, yeah, but you prepare them and they go to the city and we stay here like that. But no, little by little, some people return, some people stay there and pay back to the community. So to me, that's a wonderful experience and I always have them in my heart.
Yes, community as a powerful and dynamic force for change. And these women won't stop either. They've got even bigger goals now. Jeanette, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today, for sharing these stories, dreams, and power of these women in Ixmukane, and for all of your work to help build up this community.
Emily, thank you very much. Thank you to you. There are not many opportunities to speak about these projects and experiences, so it's been very nice. Thank you. And thank you to the listeners. Whenever you had opportunity to go to that region, go and visit.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and post about it on social media. To catch all the latest from PWRDF, you can follow us on Twitter at PWRDF, Instagram at PWRDF_justgeneration. And don't forget to check out PWRDF.org. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.